Thank you for subscribing to HawkeyeJive.com, your stop for Iowa football, men's basketball content. I'm Brendan Stiles. Pleased to be joined again, as always, with Gary Dolphin, play-by-play man for the Iowa Hawkeyes. Gary, how's it going this evening?
Happy holidays, Brendan, and to all of your subscribers and the people that log on to your website. It's been an interesting fall. Sometimes expectations don't turn out the way we'd all like, but that's what makes college football the great game that it is. And I have a hunch, given everything that's happened, true or false, with the Iowa football team since the season ended, that the real Iowa team will be present in Tempe and extra motivated.
You touched on the expectations, and I guess I wanted to get your thoughts first on just how you feel this season went, just now that you've had a little bit of time to reflect back on it. And obviously Iowa going 7-5 wasn't what many were anticipating happening. Just when you look back at 2010, what kind of sticks out in your mind?
I can remember doing interviews back in the summer. I thought this team was capable of winning 9 or 10 games. And unlike a lot of people, I knew the home schedule, even though they were at home, was going to be extremely difficult. Wisconsin was picked right near the top. Ohio State's Ohio State. Michigan State, you knew, was going to be good. Not that good, but we knew Michigan State would be good. And then with, Iowa State and Penn State, obviously Penn State's always good, but you didn't know what you had there. And the one-point loss to Wisconsin, something seemed to happen, even though they bounced back the next week and beat a top-five team in Michigan State handily. It just was not the same football team after the Wisconsin game, save for the Michigan State game. The month of November was horrific, to say the least, other than the Indiana victory. And that could have easily went the other way. Try to pinpoint what happened, and I'm not trying to avoid the question, Brendan, but I think all three phases could be blamed. Special teams was a thorn in the Hawks' side up and down all year long. All phases of special teams. Defensively, they couldn't get a stop more often than not in the fourth quarter in November. And that's so unlike this Iowa defense. Now, I happen to think that one of the reasons was that they were on the field too much. So the offense, where they were up around 50-55% on third down converts up until November, that tailed off significantly in the month of November, their third down conversions. Rick Stanzi, more often than not, was not on the same page with his receivers, DJK, McNutt. Many times I saw confusion in the routes that were being run. Rick either mostly overthrowing receivers, and I mean open receivers, and this is by his own admittance. The receivers were not happy publicly with the way the passing game was going. Obviously, injuries really affected the running situation. Adam Robinson with two concussions. They were down to Adam Robinson and a true freshman. I understand that. The offensive line got beat up at a couple positions, most notably guard. Back to defense. Linebackers, as you know, Iowa lives by that walkout linebacker that can cover that slot receiver or tight end. They didn't have that from the Wisconsin game on when Tyler Nielsen cracked a vertebrae in his neck. And so it just seemed like it was one thing after another. You couldn't really put your finger on one issue. There was plenty of blame to go around. But I never heard a lot of open public sniping by the players at one position or another. That's not Kirk Ferentz style. That's not his coaching staff style. And so they've taken their hits here at 7-5. A lot of teams would give their eye teeth for 7-5. But the bottom line is, Brandon, when you look at the numbers, they were not able to finish games in the fourth quarter. They were either leading or tied in every one of those five losses going either into the fourth quarter, midway through the fourth quarter, or starting the fourth quarter, and couldn't finish games. And as you know, last year they were 4-2 in games decided by a score or less. This year they were 1-5. So I think it speaks for itself.
Now you look at Iowa going up against Missouri here in the Insight Bowl. I guess what was going through your mind when you first heard the matchup? Because obviously on one hand, yeah, it showed that the Gator and Outback Bowls both decided, okay, we're going to go a different direction here as opposed to going with Iowa. But, you know, Missouri's a 10-2 team and got picked ahead of Nebraska for the game on the Big 12 end.
But understand, too, records don't mean anything once you get beyond the Capital One Bowl. And I think the Gator would have loved to have had Iowa, an Iowa-Florida matchup. I think the Hawks were a lock for the Outback Bowl had they beat Minnesota. Mm-hmm. So I do think record played into it a little bit there, because if they're 5-3, now they're in whatever third place or fourth place by themselves at 5-3. They're not in that 4-4 logjam. So that's a factor. Then I think the commissioner stepped in. I think both the Big Ten, Big 12, whatever leagues are involved, got together and said, okay, let's look at it politically, and let's look at it from a best matchup standpoint. And for me, I'm delighted with the Iowa-Missouri matchup, to your first point. I did not want to see Iowa-Nebraska. Call me a traditionalist. Call me a historian. But the first time those two teams play in the new Big Ten, I want it to be in Iowa City or in Lincoln. I don't want it to be in a bowl game, even though it's a year away from Iowa-Nebraska playing in November out in Lincoln. I just think that would have taken away something from next year's game. And that's just me thinking. But I also think that politically, that entered into all of the mixing and matching that Jim Delaney and these bowls settled into. When you look at the big picture, I think the Big Ten got the best of it. I think they've got some wonderful matchups all over the map, not just the Insight Bowl.
Now, since that announcement came, obviously there's been some rough news with the team. You had the arrest with Darrell Johnson Koulianos, and he's since been dismissed, for lack of a better phrase here. And then you had Brandon Wager officially released from his scholarship, Jewel Hampton announcing that he's transferring, and then Ferentz earlier this week was saying that Adam Robinson would not be able to go in the Insight Bowl for reasons that, you know, he had. Just when you look back on everything, and especially the press conference on Tuesday with Coach Ferentz and with Gary Barta, how do you feel all this has been handled by them when you consider what happened and all the stuff that was out there?
You know, they have no control over all the stuff that was out there. The internet does a lot of good things, but I've got no respect or use for the chat rooms or the boards or whatever you call them. I may even have the terminology screwed up. That's just not me. When you can hide behind an internet moniker, a fake name, a nickname, and not back up what you're saying, and that's how these ugly rumors grow and grow legs. And I mean, I had people texting me with names of Iowa players that flat out, they said, failed drug tests. That's just ridiculous. But that's the world we live in, the instant messaging and the internet world. Like I said, it does a lot of good things, the internet does, but there is the ugly side of it. So that's number one. There's one Iowa player that is facing drug-related charges. Unfortunately, it's DJK. Adam Robinson's situation is totally opposite of that scenario. His is for other reasons that he's been suspended from the bowl game, and I fully expect him to be back. I mean, I know Adam pretty good. He's great personality. He's a common-sense guy, and I think when he understands the entire situation, he'll want to come back even more motivated, because he is Iowa's number one running back. The Wager and Hampton situations didn't surprise me in the least. Maybe Hampton a little bit, but the guy hasn't played in 2 years. He's torn both ACLs, and you know, as competitive as Jewel Hampton is, and as good a running back, I think, as he is, he's looking at Adam Robinson, Marcus Coker, Brad Rogers, and whoever else they bring in the recruiting process is, you know what, I keep dropping further and further down the depth chart here, and the poor guy's had to reprove himself twice now, and maybe he's thinking perhaps I ought to go closer to home or transfer to a school where I know I can come in and play right away, because he doesn't want to sit on the bench. He's got a lot of ability, and nobody's worked harder than Jewel Hampton to get that body back in shape, and that's where I really feel bad for him. Brandon Wager, I think it's a tragedy what happened there. Brandon obviously has a lot of personal issues going on. I was hoping against hope that he would come back. And maybe that should have been a tip-off back in August, Brendan, when Wager left the team and Coker broke his clavicle, that, you know what, maybe there's going to be more potholes than we care to admit to this coming season. So, again, a big picture, a lot of things were overblown and overplayed this past last week. That's unfortunate. I feel bad for Kirk because here's what Iowa fans need to understand. There's nobody in more control of a situation than Kirk Ferentz. And we need to trust him and his coaches and his program that they're doing the right thing and that they've got things under control. Iowa drug tests above and beyond what the Big Ten and the NCAA mandates. There's a lot of schools that don't do that and don't play that game. And I'm not pointing fingers out there, but if everybody was as scrutinizing as Iowa was, we'd have a lot less issues to deal with. So I think, unfortunately, in the state of Iowa, college football is a big deal for a lot of reasons than we care to admit. And among the four Division I schools in the state, to me, the Hawks are the big deal. And so anything that happens in Iowa City is either going to be overplayed or blown out of proportion, good and bad.
And then just real quickly before we get a little into the game, on Monday the Big Ten revealed its new logo, announced the divisions, and the names Legends and Leaders. I'm curious what your take is on this, because I know a lot of people have been kind of bashing the conference, for lack of a better phrase, in light of those names being announced. But, what was going through your mind? Like, you hear all that, and you see Iowa's in the Legends division.
Well, let me preface this. I think Jim Delaney's a miracle worker. I think the guy has been so good for the league. When you look at what he's done in orchestrating the Big Ten Network, and just the Big Ten is still the primo league among the BCS leagues. That said, and I said this tonight on Kirk's show, I can't imagine it took him 4 months to come up with Legends and Leaders, and they were and I watched the the special on the Big Ten Network the other day. They were concerned about upsetting people by, if you're not going to name it from a geographical footprint, like Big Ten East, Big Ten West, North, South, okay, I get that. I don't like the logo. I understand what they're trying to do and keep it fairly generic. I didn't like that. Then when I heard Leaders and Legends, and then the explanation that they didn't want to offend anybody by putting this name on it or that name on the division, but then they name 18 trophies with last names. They label, yeah. So I'm trying to figure that out. Now, I'm sure it'll grow on me. I just don't understand the legions Legends and Leaders. I mean, I understand why they did that. Leaders of the Big Ten academically, as well as athletically, and legends. There's no more league in America that has as many legendary names as the Big Ten. But that said, we got Dallas Clark's name on the tight end trophy. We got Niall Kinnick's name on the postgraduate meritorious service award with Niall and with President Ford. I think that's terrific. Ted Kwolek and Dallas Clark are on the tight end trophy. I think Reggie Roby's name should have been on the punting trophy, and Nate Kading should have been on the kicking trophy. But like I said, they're not going to keep everybody happy. But I'm okay with naming all those trophies after guys. I just don't understand the legends and leaders. I thought they could have done a better job on that, but that's just me.
Now let's actually talk a little bit about the game here. I mentioned Missouri being a 10-2 team. What stands out to you about the Tigers when you just take a glimpse as far as like what they were able to accomplish this season, and being a team that Iowa's going to be facing in this game?
The way they spread the wealth around on offense. I mean, it is a West Coast spread offense, but there's four or five guys that have anywhere from 250, 300 yards rushing to 900 yards rushing. And Gabbert, the quarterback's one of those. He's got 450-some yards rushing, as well as being a good passer. They'll throw some real wild formations at you. And as we know, the Hawks have been bothered a little bit this year by different types of spread offenses. But the flip side of that, or contrast that with the fact that when Norm Parker's had a month to prepare for an opponent's offense, he's won more often than he's lost. So I'm confident the Hawks will be good enough defensively to at least come up with a draw. I mean, Georgia Tech was so impressive last year with that running game, and Iowa completely shut him down. So Norm's looking at tape right now as we speak, and there's nothing Missouri's putting together that he hasn't seen before. Mm-hmm. It's just up to the defense to get out there and play the way we know they can play. What's encouraging is Gabbert will put it up in traffic. He's been picked 7 or 8 times this year. Iowa's number one in the country in interceptions, number one in the country with 17. I think that's a key stat. Missouri doesn't really try to run the ball down your throat. They're a big short passing team, but they like to throw the ball around. But they can run it. I think it's Iowa's pass defense against that passing game of Missouri. Defensively, the Tigers are good. They're solid. Their defensive ends are, as Kirk likes to say, slippery. They blitz more often than not. So I just find it hard to believe that even without DJK and without Adam Robinson, that Ken O'Keefe and Coach Ferentz won't come up with a good, solid game plan that features more Ricky Stanzi, more Marvin McNutt, more Allen Reisner. The tight ends, I've been a firm believer, when you got a team that's blitzing you a lot, you got to use the tight end, whether it's a screen pass, you got to run screens, you got to run counters, and I think the Hawks know that. So that's the kind of game I look for on December 28th.
Just, I guess my final question here, besides like the keys that you feel are important as far as Iowa being able to win this game, how much of it do you feel is mental when you, I ask because obviously you've called a lot of bowl games, but as far as the mentality that the team has going in, do you feel like the players' mentalities are in the right place right now given the season they went through and everything that's kind of gone on here recently?
I do because of our coaching staff. This isn't the first time Iowa's had a little controversy mm-hmm. off the field, and this coaching staff has been able to get all the guys back on page one. And I have no doubt they'll have a solid game plan. They've got 30 days to prepare. History has shown, whether it be South Carolina 2 years ago or Georgia Tech last year, history has shown that this coaching staff is pretty good and getting everybody on the same page when they've got a month to prepare for a bowl game. There'll be less entrapments going to Phoenix than there is going to a BCS Bowl or going to Florida or the Outback Bowl. The Insight Bowl is not one of those quote-unquote major bowls. It's a great bowl, don't get me wrong. It's in a great area in Phoenix. They'll have the home crowd. It'll seem like a home crowd, I guess I should say. Iowa's the home team. They'll be wearing the black uniforms. So I just like the spin that this game is taking right now, Brendan. But the bottom line is, and I left special teams out, not intentionally. Special teams needs to step up and play their best game, because if there's been an Achilles heel all year, it was special teams. And you can trace that back to the Arizona game, and it seems to have plagued Iowa ever since, off and on. So hopefully all three phases show up on December 28th.
You can listen to Gary call the game along with Ed Podolak on Tuesday, December the 28th on the Hawkeye Radio Network. Kickoff is scheduled for 9 p.m. Central. It'll be 8 p.m. out in Arizona. And then the Hawkeye Huddle, that's the night before, right, in Phoenix?
That's December 27th at the Phoenix Convention Center from 6 to 7:30. Iowa time, and we'll also have a live Hawk Talk Bowl show from 7 to 8:30 Iowa time from the Convention Center. Eddie Podolak and I will be interviewing a lot of good guests, so it should be a fun trip down to Phoenix. Let's hope it's a victorious trip.
Well, Gary, thank you very much for the time, not just tonight, but all throughout the season. We've really enjoyed having you on.
My pleasure, Brennan. Happy holidays to everybody.